Welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast, where you'll learn how to structure terms and use various creative financing strategies to create profitable deals for short and long-term wealth. Whether you're a buy and hold investor, wholesaler, or flipper, learning creative financing will help you do more deals and unlock profits that you may not even know existed. On the Creative Financing Podcast, we break down actual deals we and our guests are doing and simplify the methods and terms used to execute these strategies. Now, let's dive in and create some terms.
Hello and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Gallegos, here with
Jeff Rappaport.
And today, guys, this is the part number two with Andy McFarland. If you haven't heard the last episode, go back and listen to that because he really drops some golden nuggets there as, you know, as it pertains to life and relationships and communication. So there's a big takeaway from that episode. So go back and check that one out. On part two here, we're going to be talking more specifically about creative financing and the creative deals that Andy is doing. And Andy is no stranger to creative financing. He's been using that tool for, I don't know, probably since you started real estate, I would guess. Yeah. So let's dive into that, Andy. Tell us about a couple creative financing your deals you're doing right now, and maybe tell us about one of the most creative deals you've done in the past, and then we'll just go from there.
Sure. You guys want to get down to the nitty-gritty. Let's get down to the nitty-gritty, as Nacho would say. Sure. So most of the deals that we're doing, so my primary business is flipping houses, whether it be short-term, like via wholesaling a house, or like, or we do what I call retail flip, was most people buy, you fix it up and you sell it to a retail buyer. That's most of the stuff we do. So the seller financing we use most of the time is just some form of a short-term seller financing, right? So, and you guys, your listeners have probably heard of this. This is like, you know, it's if they don't have a mortgage, if they don't owe anything, you're just having them hold the note for you. And that can be no interest. It can be no interest, no payments. It can have some sort of payments and some sort of interest. But, you know, we're talking 9 months so that you can get in there, do what you need to do, and sell the property and pay them off and get out. Now, another
avoiding
form of that.
Hard money, right?
What's that? Avoiding hard money, absolutely. Because hard money is, one, it's a pain to deal with all like the hoops they want you to jump through. You got to call somebody and grovel a little bit, right? Now, yeah. I got to be careful. I'm the other side of that. I don't make my borrowers grovel. But, you know, I like to lend money to people that don't know where to find money other places, right? Because sure. It's make a good return on my money. But yeah, sellers, they're not expecting what a private lender or a hard money lender is expecting. They're just not expecting that. So it's easier to get lower, to better terms from them there. So that, if they don't owe anything, absolutely have them hold on to their equity, wait for their equity for the next, you know, 6 to 9 months. That helps things a lot. And the other form of that, your listeners are probably well aware, is some form of subject to, right? Or, you know, all-inclusive trustee, wraparound mortgage, lots of different forms of it. But it's just like this, you know, they have a loan, you pay them their equity, maybe up front at closing, maybe they have to wait for a little bit for their equity, but you're servicing the payments on their underlying debt for 6 to 9 months. And there you go. So that's the majority of the stuff that we're doing, because, you know, flippers want it for that short-term financing, or even people that want to do it as a rental property, they want to be able to reposition the property and be able to refinance off of that. So that's the majority of the seller financing, I'd say, we're doing. And I know for the Creative Financing Podcast, that's pretty boring.
Not really.
That's the workhorse. Yeah. That's the workhorse.
Yeah. That's one of our go-to. I mean, that should be everyone's.
Yeah. That's
part of their offer, right? I mean, if you've got a cash offer, you should follow it up with, you know, a short-term owner finance offer. It's easy. But it doesn't require you to be a financial whiz on the calculator or anything. I mean, it's very simple, and you can save yourself, or you can make yourself a little more money. Yeah, and it's the wholesale fee, or save on the rehab costs.
And it's the lowest barrier of entry with creative financing, right? So if you're going to come in with a cash offer, then just follow it up with, you know, a short-term financing offer for 6, 8, 10 months.
Yep, absolutely. And if they have an underlying mortgage or something, here's the key word that I would like to say. And everybody's got their own word tracks, but I would ask a seller. And here's the thing too, your listeners have probably already heard this a gazillion times, but you never try to sound overly fancy with your words.
I want to take your house subject to.
Oh man, I would never say something like that, right? I'm very down to earth with people, and I might say something like this to them. When I find out, you know, that they owe something on the property, say, hey, what if we work, now we're going to do this and we're going to buy the property and you're going to get your money. Question for you. I know you owe a little bit of something. You owe Wells Fargo, you said $110,000. That question, would you mind if Wells Fargo had to wait a couple of months to get all of their money? And then they'll say, well, what do you mean by that, right? And that opens the door to you, they'll say. And now it opens the door, don't stick your foot in your mouth and say anything about seller financing. Don't say those terms, don't say subject. Say, well, you know, sometimes we'll find a way that we'll close, we'll do everything above board at a title company, but we'll do it all legal, right? And you can have all the paperwork to this thing, but we'll just pay Wells Fargo, we'll service that debt. So your payment's $900 a month. We'll make that payment, we'll handle all the other stuff. We'll write that check for you for 6 months or so, and then we'll pay them at the end of that 6 months. But you'll get everything that's coming to you up front. Would you mind if they had to wait? And they're like, they have no love for the banks. They're like, well, I don't really care. As long as it's all legal and unprotected. Yeah, absolutely. So if you don't mind their wait, that actually allows me to give you, you know, that helps me, and allow me to help you a little bit more, make this deal better for both of us, frankly. Now that conversation right there is a very easy one to have. If you've been in rapport with them, if they trust you, because it's a high trust deal, you're not gonna do a terms deal, somebody doesn't trust you. But I've had very limited sellers that don't say yes to that. And now if they don't say yes to that, it's because maybe I didn't do my groundwork right. They needed something else, right? They had some other need to have that loan gone or whatever.
They got to qualify for a new loan right away. You know,
absolutely.
Get the income. Yeah.
Absolutely. Right.
Well, and I think, again, you know, it's not necessarily, there are a lot of different ways to say what we want to accomplish, right? Because what you said, I thought was awesome. I've never thought of that before. That would work. I would say something like, you know, Mr. Seller, I can offer you this cash offer, but this offer is going to get you more money. And what I'd love to do is just buy your property, give you all of your equity up front, and we're just going to buy the property with the debt that's already on it for a short period of time. That way you get the money that we'd end up having to go borrow. Does that sound like something that would work for you? And yeah, they both accomplish the same thing. We're not saying, oh, I'm going to take subject two, and subject two is this, and the due on sale clause, and the blah, blah, blah. Or we're going to do a wrap. And they don't want to hear about that. They don't care.
Less is more.
Yeah, don't try to impress by your education how much you know. You know, be simple. You know, get to the, you know, hey, is this something that you would consider? Get you more money. And I love hearing different perspectives, because I would have never thought of that one.
And the confused mind says no. So
I'm just going to say that.
Jonathan is famous for that.
And we're on the same track with that. But we're all that way, right? Whether it be on real estate world, and frankly, most of sellers, this is their only transaction they've ever done, or the second one. But and everything in life, nobody wants to look stupid. And instead of saying, oh, well, can you clarify that for me? I don't understand stuff. They're just going to say, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. Which really means like they have no clue what you just told them. They're like, that's your bad. It's not their bad. Yeah.
So Andy, last episode, you briefly mentioned like doing a loan or giving a loan to somebody and buying a property or something. Tell us about that deal, because you said it was pretty creative.
Yeah, pretty creative, but not much so much like you guys would think, with some crazy, you know, doing this and a blended interest rate and different, you know, substitution, this and that. It was simple, right? I went into there. I told you guys last time that I go into a house and I just think blank slate. I'm here for them. I talked to these people. The wife was very interested in selling. The house was trashed, your typical situation, right? They're behind on payments to everybody and their dog, but they don't owe very much. I mean, I'm talking, they owe like 25 grand on a house that's worth $300,000. It's probably in its as-is condition worth 200 grand, right? Is what an investor is gonna offer them. They owe 25 grand, and the wife's like, we gotta sell, we need the money, all this stuff. And I get them, like, great. So it seems like a situation, it's might just a cash deal, we're closing this thing, we're buying it, right? And the husband's like, I get there, start talking to him, because it's both of them. They're both decision makers. And he has zero interest in selling this property. And he's pretty vocal about it, right? And he's pretty vocal about how beautiful his house is too, right? But they're in financial trouble. So as I listened to him, ultimately they both came up and said, we need $25,000. We need somebody to loan us that. And they're like, we've gone to every bank, gone everywhere, our credit shot. We can't get the money anywhere. So I said, let me understand you guys. You don't want to sell your house. She's like, well, I want. He's like, no, we're not selling this house. So what do you need? She says, we just need a loan. We need somebody to loan us 25 grand. And they look at me and they said, do you know anybody that's got $25,000? And I said, well, what if I told you I'd loan you the money? And they were both so skeptical. They're like, what, where would you get that? And why would you do that for us? Why would you loan us the $25,000? I said, look, I'm not like a saint. This isn't just altruism. I said, it would help you out. And it'd be a way that could help me too. I mean, I'd charge you interest. They're like, well, how much interest, right? I said, look, it wouldn't be overly burdensome. What's your payment right now? And they told me what it was. It was principal and interest. And I said, look, I'll do interest only for you. I'll keep the payment less than you're at right now. I said, if I could do that for you, it would solve your problem. They're like, absolutely solve this problem. But why would you do this? They were so skeptical, right? And they had this financial advisor that they wanted to run it past. I said, great, run it past your financial advisor. He ultimately ended up calling me a couple of days later saying, like, so what are you gonna do? You're gonna loan them money? I'm like, yeah. And he was scratching his head too. And I said, look, I told them this, and I said, I'll tell you why I'm gonna do it. So I'm gonna loan them the money at an interest rate. I'm gonna take a first position, I'm gonna charge them some interest. Is that fair? I'm like, yeah, it's fair to charge them interest. The payment's lower. Cool, I'm gonna do that. Well, why would you do that? I said, look, here's what I would like. I would like, if they're ever gonna sell this house to anybody, I would like an opportunity to buy it and to match that net price that they would get. And he's like, well, yeah. I said, that's a year or 20 years, I don't care. If they're ever gonna sell it, I would like the opportunity to match whatever net price they're gonna get for giving them this loan. And he said, sure. They're like, yeah, absolutely. There was a no-brainer to them. What I just told them was, from a technical standpoint, I want to get a first right of refusal.
Yeah.
That's what it is. That's the technical term. So what I did was I gave them the loan in a first position.
So you paid off their existing whatever
they owed. Okay. And they had more than I thought. They had a first position loan with some like weird lender that like wasn't happy to be paid off because he was trying to foreclose on it. They had a second position thing. They had some tax liens on it. They owed like Czech City some money. So it ended up being more than it was the 25 grand, right? Yeah. Which was fine. I mean, it wasn't going to be overly, it was like 40 grand or something it was. Yeah. So the payment adjusted a little bit, but ultimately I did that as a separate recorded transaction. And then also record on title. I recorded separate from that thing, a first right of refusal and a notice of, well, actually I didn't record the first right of refusal. I recorded a notice of interest referencing the first right of refusal, so they couldn't have to see that, right? And that's it. So now I know that those people, at some point, whether they die or they run into financial difficulties or divorce or whatever it is, they're going to have to sell it. And what I've written out in that first right of refusal is it's net of all real estate commissions. So if they forget about me and they list it and they get an offer, I'm going to be able to take that offer that's accepted, less all commissions, and I have 60 days to buy at that price or determine if I want to. So I mean, that's not a form of creative financing I've ever heard in any sort of a book, but it met their needs. Met their needs, and it meets my needs, right? It meets my needs.
See, that's very creative. I love that. I've never even thought of that.
And you know what, John?
First right of refusal.
I never thought of that either until I sat there in front of them and I thought, like, this will work for both of us. Let's do it.
That's so cool.
And that's why everyone was scratching their head. Like, their financial advisor, he was like, yeah, I don't see how this is a bad deal. It seems like it works for everybody. I'm like, yep.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
You know, Andy, creative financing isn't always just the numbers, right? It's the way that you look at deals and the way that you structure them. We had a guest on, Josh Silgalski. I don't know if you know him or not.
I met him once through you, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Josh likes to do commercial deals, and his creative financing was a little different. Was, you know, trying to structure due diligence for longer periods of time. So could actually go find a commercial tenant during that time frame rather than, you know, trying to close, bring in hard money, take all that risk. So creative financing takes so many different directions, and I love that idea. Now you're on, you know, as long as they own this property, they got to go through you. And why wouldn't they go through you now? You just saved them, you bailed them out. How long ago was this deal, and did they follow through?
This has been only been 4 or 5 months. Oh, yes, they're following through. They're making payments every month. And even after that loan, after they've cured that loan, paid it off, or if they refinance the loan, frankly, I don't care. Yeah. I don't have to stay in that place. I have the other thing's recorded separate from that.
Yeah.
So it's two different transactions.
Yeah.
Same transaction. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Love it.
What's the term of your loan, Andy?
I think I did a 5-year loan with them. But again, I mean, I'm not going to foreclose on them. I'm a nice guy. I'm gonna work it out with them. I'm going to work it out with them, right? Because ultimately for me too, all of these things and all my interactions with people, I know there's more to this life than just like, frankly, it's good business practice to do the right thing by people. But also I feel like I'm a man of faith, and I think you guys are both men of faith. Like, I know there's more than just what you can get in this life. And I feel good doing the right thing right now. And I know that's the right thing forever. I want to be the type of guy, I want to become that type of a person that's more loving, empathetic, that does the right thing. And if I do that, I think I'll prosper in this life, but I certainly know that that's who I want to become forever.
Amen. So based on that last remark, so did you do this with like no interest or low amount of interest or?
Yeah, so I did charge them interest, but it's an interest only payment every month. So it kept their payments lower than they were before. Sure. And that was the other thing that scratched their head. They're like, well, we're paying, you know, X per month now. And I said, I'll do it for less than that. Cause they were really concerned, like, oh yeah, you're going to do this. We're going to charge us twice what we're paying. I'm like, no, I'm going to charge you less than what you're currently paying. Now, there's no principal pay down, but when you're talking about a $40,000 loan, it's not that hard to get this thing done.
Do they need principal pay down? They've got plenty of equity. That's
absolutely
not equity, right. So,
yeah. So that's what I did for them. And really, I just gave them everything they wanted and just one thing that I wanted that, frankly, they don't really care. I mean, they don't understand why that's valuable. Now, all of the people on the show, their experience listening, you guys are both going, oh, I want that. But no, they don't get it.
Yeah.
Even their financial advisor was like, what? Okay, sure. You know?
I love it.
Yeah.
But even at 10, 12%, even like at hard money rates, which is, I'm guessing you were somewhere around, yep, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, what are you looking at for $40,000? I mean,
$400.
Yeah. I mean, it's not much. So
less than what they're paying.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
So, yeah. I love it. Very good.
And it met their needs, and we were all happy at the end of that. They were super happy. And I was happy that they were happy, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't a big deal to me. It was a huge deal to them.
And now you're sitting, you know, waiting for the day that they say, all right, it's time to sell. And you know, maybe the husband realizes, hey, maybe my house isn't in such great shape after all. So
maybe, maybe, but I'll be kind to them at that point too, because ultimately I'm the golden rule is in full effect, right? I want to treat other people as I would want to be treated.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And you know, I'm not interested in trying to steal properties from people. Yeah. You know, I think that's like one of the first things that comes up when you cold call. Are you going to try to lowball me? Are you going to try to steal my house? It's like, look, I need to make a profit, but you know, I don't need to get rich off your deal. And that's the way I look at things. It obviously sounds like that's how you look at things, Andy. And Jonathan, I already know that's how you deal with people too. And I agree. What goes around comes around. At least that's the hope. And do the right thing, you feel a lot better about yourself.
Yeah, the peace of mind that comes from the deal at the end of the day too, right?
That's right. Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, ultimately, you know, for a few more bucks, a few more $1,000, I mean, do you sleep well at night knowing that you took advantage of someone, or do you sleep better knowing that, hey, I did the right thing?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So I'm Andy, been able to have done that for them too.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So Andy, what's one of the most creative deals you've done? What stands out in your mind from your experience in the deals you've done? I know, you know, I've heard you talk about like creating a 30-year mortgage with, you know, with the seller before. So what's one of the most creative deals you've done, or you know, just something that is very impressive in the creative financing world?
Sure. And I'm going to share this story, and I may have shared it before, so forgive me if some of you guys have heard this one before, but this is something that I don't want your listeners to think that this is something that comes along all the time. It's not. When we're talking creative financing, although this is like going to be a phenomenal deal, I don't want people to think like they need to go for this every time. Cause really this is a situation that's like, it's a needle in a haystack. When you see certain things stack up in it, you're like, I can execute these multiple strategies to make this just a phenomenal deal for both me and for the seller. So this one started, guy called me for some advertising. A tired landlord, we've all heard this story before. He had owned the property for 40 plus years. He lived there with his wife. She dies, he moves out. 30 years pass, he's got somebody living there and happens to be a relative, which weird, they weren't paying rent. That's weird. We've all heard this before, right? So I go there.
30 years, right?
Yeah, I mean he's carrying this for 30 years and the place is trash and he's disappointed because he gets in there, this relative finally left and we're sitting there with him. So I listen to him, I listen to his situation, and there's a couple of different people making offers on this property and I'm there with him, but I took the time to listen to him. Nice guy. And he says, and he's on Social Security. He's got this property that he owes and he's depreciated it all. He probably bought it for like 25 grand and it's all depreciated out. So he's got a huge, you know, super low tax basis in this property. And he's going to sell this. And he just wants to take that money, put it somewhere to invest it for his retirement. I mean, this is the perfect setup for any of you guys that know Schnitzler Finance. You're like, bam, I'm going to help this guy do that. Right. And he doesn't have a ton of sophisticated investing options because I asked him. He's just a guy that's going to put it in the market and do whatever. Annuities, right? And I'm like, ding, 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 golden here. So I went in there. I made him an offer for his house. It was actually a less offer. So, I mean, he liked me, right? It was a less offer. Somebody offered him more in cash, which is interesting. He had like $105,000 cash offer. He ended up going with me probably because I listened to him and I cared and I took the time for his specific circumstances. He sold me the house for $90,000. No money down. 30-year fixed at 4% interest. Now, why in the heck would he do that? He did that because I talked to him. I said, look, I'm not a financial advisor, but I think you can structure a sale where you're what the IRS calls an installment sale. The IRS calls it that, right? That if you don't receive all of your money up front, then you can pay taxes as you receive it, and you won't have to pay that big tax chunk. And I said, and that saves your Social Security that you're currently getting and living on from being taxable. I said, you don't want that to be taxable. He says, no, older people don't really like the government. They don't like paying a ton of taxes for that, right? So I said, look, if we structure it this way, it will be as instead of selling your house for $90,000 cash, paying $30,000 or $25,000 in taxes, and then you've got an investable of $65,000, why don't you just invest the whole $90,000 at 4% interest? And he's like, I can do that? I said, yeah, I think so. Now consult your tax advisor. And he did. And they came back and said, yep, he's absolutely right. So we structured an installment sale, which is just 30-year fixed, 4% interest. He's making $450 a month, principal and interest. He gets that payment every month. Now he's happy because he didn't have to pay those group taxes, right? Now what I did there, I added a couple other things there, which made this even more creative. Yeah. I added what we know, a walkable mortgage, substitution of collateral. Now I didn't tell him those things. What I said to him is I said, look, we're doing this for 30 years. We're doing this for your tax benefit. We're doing this because, you know, you want your income and stuff. You want that 4%. If I had to, if something came up where I was forced to sell this property, it would be bad because then you'd get a phone call one day and say, great, I'm going to get payoff. And you're like, I don't want to pay the taxes. I want my 4%. What's going to go on here? I said, in order to avoid that, what if we just write something in there that as long as you're okay with it, that we could move that IOU, because, you know, I owe you this money. I want to pay every month. We just move it somewhere else as long as that other property or collateral is more than what I owe you. Would that be fair? And he's like, well, I don't see any reason why we couldn't do that. I'm like, yeah, let's just do that. I said, perfect, we'll write that. And so that's how I explained it to him. We wrote it in there as a first right or a substitution collateral. And the other thing I wrote in there, because he's an older gentleman, I wanted a first right of refusal if for whatever reason he passed away and wanted his heirs got that. So I said, look, I said, we're friends. I'm writing you a check every month. As a courtesy, I would not like it if somebody called me and said, hey, by the way, Andy, you need to write a check to me now because I own this note. It wouldn't sit well with me. I'd rather know about it. He said, well, yeah, I mean, I'd tell you. And I said, okay, great. Would you mind that we just write that in there that if you ever were, for whatever reason, going to sell this to somebody else, you give me an option, let me know up front and give me an option. Maybe I've got cash at the time. Maybe I can buy it.
Yep.
And he said, yeah, that sounds perfect. That's how I explained it to him. And what turned into in the note was a first right of refusal if the properties or the debt is ever sold at a discount, right? So I got that written in there. Now, that's all fine and good. I got this 30-year. I'm borrowing his money for 30 years at 4% interest, which everybody's salivating right now saying that's a great deal. And it is a great deal, right? Because the deal is separated into two parts. One, it's the money. Would you like to borrow $90,000 at 4% under flexible terms? Absolutely. Everybody would raise their hand all day long. But the other part of this, with no money down, right? Now, the other side of this is the house. Did I overpay for the house? Now, sometimes to get terms, we will overpay for the house. But I didn't have to overpay for the house. Well, actually, I didn't like his house. Busy road, weird. I didn't like it. So what I did was I flipped his house. I knew I was going to flip his house. I didn't want to keep it as a rental. So when I went to closing, I actually didn't record his $90,000 trust deed against his house. I recorded against another house that I owned free and clear, which is a house that I liked that was remodeled that I was keeping as a rental.
Yep.
So I recorded his $90,000 note against my rental house, basically refinancing it. Then I took his house and I now own free and clear. I put $20,000 in to fix it up and sold it and made a $15,000 profit like a normal flip. And now I make payments to him continuing on the rental house. Now it gets even better because I sold that rental house 3 years ago. And he had his note on there. And I called him up and I said, hey, I'm actually going to move you to this better one. And he's like, okay, great. So I moved him from that house over to another rental house that I'm keeping. And I sold my other house, right? So I just kept moving his money from, and he's extremely happy. He loves it. And we're all going along our merry way. So
have you used the money from the substitution of collateral? You've moved it several times.
I keep moving it.
Yep. And he's fine with it.
Fine with it. Loves it. It's never an issue. I mean, why would it be an issue, right? None of our terms have changed. He gets paid every month. He's happy.
Well, and he was secured against a really crappy house compared to, you know, several that are much better conditioned than his was.
And I did always take care of him too. And I'm going to stress this. I mean, you build a rapport with people. That's why they're going to do a deal with you. It's a little more creative and unconventional. But then also I back that up by always doing what I say I'm going to do. Always doing what I say I'm going to do. And I did put him initially on a better house. It was absolutely a better house, worth more than his house was. And then when I moved him again to this other property, it was again a better property. So I wasn't trying to stick him on a house that was worth 20 grand in Indianapolis that I'm borrowing his 90 grand on. I wasn't doing that. I was actually giving him a better property.
Yeah.
He was comfortable with.
You know, Andy, so I love substitution of collateral. I think that is one of the more creative techniques to use, and it the time that it comes up is when you have a seller that just does not want to get cashed out, right?
Yeah.
Either they want to make the interest that you're promising them, or they're trying to avoid that big tax consequence that will occur once you cash them out. But the one that I'm really impressed with is that what people don't understand is when you get a 30-year note that you're paying, how much money are you paying?
I think it's $450
a month, right? That there is a very high chance that that seller at some point in time is going to come to you and say, "Hey, Andy, I need some money." Now, $450 is great, but I need some cash. You know, what can we do? And they have to come to you first to take a discount on the note that you're already paying on. And I don't think people understand that you absolutely want that first right of refusal on any long-term note, because most people are coming back to you at some point because $450 is not cutting it. You know, it's one thing you're paying them $2,500 a month. All right, that might suffice. But, you know, if they're owed $300,000, they need cash. And it's going to come up. And you're going to end up discounting them before 30 years.
I actually had something else written in that note too. I don't know if we want to get more deep with the people, but I did tell them, I had a conversation up front with them. I said, you know, look, you're not getting any money down on this. And it's great. We figured out why. But I said, look, if you ever do come into a place where you need to have chunks of cash, I'm willing to loan you money because obviously you owe me money. And I can probably give you not huge chunks, but you know, we could do something. He's like, okay. So I actually wrote into that note that if he wants to for small chunks, and he hasn't come to me to ask for this yet, but saying that, you know, if I could prepay, like the idea being if I prepay the next 10 months worth of payments at $450. So if I write you a check for $4,500 today, we'll call the next 12 months paid.
Yeah.
Right. So at that point, you know, I'm paying you $4,500 and that's 10 months and then it's 12 months paid. And then, you know, that's like, okay, if I need a chunk of cash at $4,500, that'd be great. And then it's $4,500 and then it's $450 times two. I mean, that's $900. Yeah. I mean, whatever, right? I helped you. You helped me. It's not a big deal. And now if you punch that in your financial calculator, it's a big deal. Yeah. You know, people don't. Yep. People don't. And who would I rather loan $4,500 to? Do I trust myself that I'll make the payments? I'm loaning it to myself, right?
Right.
Yeah, I trust myself, especially whatever interest rate that's going to work out to, which is going to, your calculator is going to show it's a good interest rate.
Yeah. No, I love it. You're building in a possible discount. And he already knows, you know, hey, I can come to you at any point in time and get this deal. He'll probably take you up on that, and then he'll probably take you up on a bigger chunk, you know, maybe the entire chunk, who knows. But
well, I got a story of that too, if you want one of those stories. This was a house in Indianapolis a few years ago, but negotiated, one of my reps actually negotiated it, which it's tougher. Like when I would go out and negotiate it, it was like, you know, I'm listening more and I have more of the creative tools in my belt. Most of the reps don't have those type of creative tools, but this one negotiated this. It was like a very simple, straightforward house in Indy, which are cheaper houses than we have here in Utah. But it was like cash price needed to be like $35,000, right? I mean, it's just, but then the terms price was, it was like $60,000, I think it was, right? So the guy obviously liked the $60,000, but the terms of the $60,000 is pretty much all of the value of the house. The house was probably worth like $65,000 and needed work, right? So it was like, okay, we'll give you $60,000, but we're going to divide that into, I think it was 20 years of just no interest straight payment. So it was cheap, a couple $100 a month. It was something like that, right? So I kept that deal because I'm like, yeah, that's a good deal. I'll just keep it as a rental. I just wanted to kind of see what it was like to have rentals in Indy. But it didn't work out as great as I thought, just because like management from afar, the management companies are tough managing. I didn't really love it, but you know, I was doing it, I was maintaining it. But I had that first right of refusal written in there, and the guy called me a couple of years ago, and he was just like, "Hey, my wife's sick, you know, we need cash." And I said, "Look, you don't want to sell this. This is not the best place to get your cash. You're gonna be better off getting it somewhere else." And he's like, "Well, I mean, what does that mean? What are you gonna pay me for it?" And I said, "Look, I mean, go shop it, go find what somebody else is willing to pay for it, and I'll see what I can do for it." And I don't know if he ever went out and got another offer, but ultimately he pressed me over a number of months, said, "I need your offer." And the offer I gave him, guys, you guys know, I punched in my financial calculator and I said, like, here's where I need to pay to get a yield on my cash. And I think I ended up paying him, it was $25,000, I think. $25,000 for the total payoff now. So it's like, he didn't want the cash price up front. He wanted the bigger chunk, and that's fine. But he said he didn't want that income stream at $200 a month. I'll give you more, but it just came right back to where we needed to be cash-wise, right? Yep. So I paid it off. I mean, like full payoff, full reconveyance and everything for $25,000. I'm willing to do that at any time, right? Because I don't care. Price or terms, whatever.
Yeah.
Well, and it's funny, it happens like that a lot where, you know, if you have this long term, especially when they're getting this small cash flow, right?
Yeah.
$200 helps, but, you know, it doesn't help that much. You know, it doesn't even cover your groceries for a month.
Here's the thing. I probably should be more proactive with this. And this is a listener, the tip for your listeners, maybe more experienced listeners that have a bunch of seller financing deals in place already. Because I've got sellers I write checks to every month still. Like personally, not so, I mean, we have that in the, in my business too, but I should be more proactive at least once a year of reaching out to them and just saying, hey, how are you doing? Rekindling that relationship and saying, you know, how are you doing money wise and everything? And then just kind of listening to them and maybe giving them an option to get some cash.
It's
advantageous for both of us. In November. That might be a time.
Yeah.
I should be better about being proactive.
Coming up for Christmas time. End of the year, tax time, you know, all the issues that come up, call them in November. You will get people that will take it constantly. And you're right. A lot of them will end up taking less than what you actually offered them for cash because they need it more now. There's more of an urgent situation now.
Amen. Yeah, really, circumstances always change for people.
Yeah.
The biggest takeaway from all this is that like the holy grail of creative financing is really being a partner, having a money partner, having that seller be your money partner in transactions, being able to use their money again and again via, you know, substitution of collateral. And then you know, if they need cash, being that partner for them too, in that note. So like I think that, and we've talked about this before on the show, Jeff, about, you know, ultimately if you can use that money again and again and again on several transactions, that's the holy grail of creative financing is, you know, by structuring these deals, you're picking up money partners. I mean, that's really what when you have a substitution collateral in place and you can move that from property to property, that's just your money partner on deals. And it's a very cheap interest rate.
Hopefully a silent money partner, right?
Yeah. Well, it's really structured that way. If you're just moving, they're just the bank and, you know, their collateral is, or their money's being tied up by a different piece of collateral. But I think that's, you know, what you're talking about, Andy, there, that you're just partnering with these people on using their real estate to secure this money, and they're just lending it to you over and over again. That's kind of how I look at it. And I really think that is, what's the best and highest thing that you can achieve with creative financing? It's, you know, finding these money partners.
Yeah. And people should look at this as two different things. When you've got a house, we're thinking like creative financing, real estate, like I separate the two. You've got the house and you got the money. Because if you're going to do that creative money, however you're going to do that, like separate the two out, especially if it's long-term where you're going to borrow their money via installment sale or whatever, and you're going to use it over and over again, you're going to try to, it's like, that's a separate deal almost from the house, right? The house can work and the money can work. It's like two separate things. You got to have a split brain and be like, okay, do I want to use their money? Because I mean, in that case, would I overpay for a house if I could borrow $400,000 at no interest for 30 years and just pay principal and payments? Absolutely. I mean, I'll pay $400,000 for a house that's worth $300,000 under those terms. If I can move it somewhere and just use their money that long, it's just thinking long-term about it. Right.
Yep. I think, but I don't want to go too much longer. So, but I remember, Andy, you did a class and you talked about taxes in regards to, owner financing. I thought it was like the best. I stay away from taxes, similar to the way that you described it earlier that, I'm not a CPA, you should probably talk to your CPA, but if we did it as an installment sale, you'd be able to spread out your tax burden over some time. You're only gonna get taxed on the money that you receive rather than have to pay it all up front. And that's usually enough, right? But yeah. You had a great class. I remember you sent me these videos because you wanted my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought they were great. Are those still around or is that something that we can direct people to?
No, those are actually part of the course, the education stuff. They're part of that. So people are in our like system, the mastermind stuff there. It's kind of part of that.
Okay. Good.
But yeah, they're still around. It's what Jeff's talking about is my acquisition managers weren't as versed in seller financing. So I thought, how can I get more seller financing deals without having anyone actually in front of the sellers negotiating? So I did it and it turned into a 4-hour class. So I've got the videos of 4 1-hour segments of just different aspects of seller financing, from like the stuff, short-term subject to type of stuff, to like the Holy Grail, as John talks about, like this long-term, no underlying mortgage. You're just creating a normal mortgage with the seller, with substitution collateral, first right refusal, note split provisions, and all this stuff, right, that you can do. So it's like, and basically it was just to like increase awareness, because the thing about it is, if you're there talking to a seller, I could be talking to a seller and somebody else that's less experienced can be talking to a seller. We could both get a rapport and we can both understand what they're trying to do. But understanding that there's the tools that are available, I can put those tools on, which a newer investor might not have those tools.
Yeah.
So I know it's possible.
Yeah. Well, that might be worth signing up for your mastermind and getting access to, because they were good classes. I remember learning quite a bit in that tax. And that is not my forte. I try to stay away from that. But yeah, I love the way that you explained it and how you could use it with the seller, and certainly great video.
Andy, there was a video that you did. I remember watching where it's kind of how you approached seller financing. And I don't know if it's still on YouTube somewhere, but I'd like you to just briefly talk about it. And it's where you're like, okay, you approach a house and you're like, how much work does it need? Is it going to be a flip or a rental? If it's going to be a flip, is there, you know, debt in place, or are we going to bring in cash or short-term financing? And then if it's going to be a rental, is there debt in place? Can we structure something around that debt, or is it free and clear? And then at that point, you know, we can create a mortgage. Do you remember that video? And can you just talk a little bit about that?
And that's kind of like, I think I probably might have, I did a shorter video that kind of prefaced that class I was just talking about, that 4-hour class that I recorded, but that's exactly the mindset that I go into these things with. I'm looking at the house and going like, okay, what is this? Because you've got you walk up to the house and certain houses just don't work themselves for a rental. If you've got a house, that's like $1 million house. I mean, you can rent it, but it's just, I wouldn't rent it, right? I wouldn't rent it. So just the value is just doesn't make sense from a payment standpoint or whatever to do that. That said, if they have owned the house free and clear, and they're really going to be financing on that, I would take that financing, move it to multiple other houses via a note split provision, and then I would sell that $1 million house, break even, to use their cash. But that's against separating the money from the house. But yeah, I mean, I go up the house and I kind of have an idea of like, okay, what's possible from a rental or flip standpoint, if it's trash, if it's pretty, but then I try to go in there and just blank slate and say, okay, Mr. Seller, what are you trying to do? And if they own the house free and clear, have a ton of equity, then the next series of questions on my mind is, and I don't ask it straight up to them, I just want to know like, what's your plans here? How sophisticated are they with the money? And I'm going to ask questions around that. What is your plans with this money?
Yeah.
You know?
Love it. Yeah. Is that video still around, Andy?
So I love Real Estate Stories as the channel, you know, John, from like, I haven't made a video in like three and a half years, but they're all sitting there. I love Real Estate Stories on YouTube. You can go watch them. So it might be, we made like 150 videos probably.
Yeah, you did a lot.
We did a ton of them, right? Yep. I've had a few people recently say, you should do some more videos again, but it's so hard. Podcasts are a little easier to produce because you can sit and talk and stuff. Videos, my goodness, we'd spend 40 hours editing a video for 1 week and then rinse repeat, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because, I've seen your videos, I've seen your podcast station. You've obviously seen our podcast. We do things a little different and maybe similar depending on the situation, but I liked what you said, because it's the way that I look at properties too. Maybe just a slight difference. Because most of the stuff that we do is wholesale, right? So if I'm looking at holding that property, or then I might look at it a little differently. But, you know, immediately I'm trying to think, who's my buyer? Who's my potential buyer? All right, it doesn't need rehab, or there's not enough equity. Rehabber's out. It's not going to generate a good cash on cash return, so rentals out. I look at wholesaling right now just because market's good, and maybe I can't quite get it low enough for a wholesale, but it would be a good one to create some short-term financing, buy it and put it right back on the market. Will that work? And then my last one is owner occupant, where, you know, you don't have a rental, the numbers won't work, but they will work if you're taking it with a 10% down payment. You know, you're charging 4 to 5, 5.5% interest, something like that. Do you do any of that, Andy, where one, do you sell to any owner occupants? And two, do you ever stay in the middle where you create financing from the seller and then create new financing to a buyer?
So I've done it before in our machine. I'd say it's kind of, it's complicated in that machine that you'd have to set up systems to kind of follow up and do that stuff. And getting that buyer on the front end would be tough, but I mean, there's a huge possibility for, I mean, I know people in certain markets that that's what they do. They sell on terms, and selling those terms, I mean, obviously you get a better down payment. You can make a spread between the interest rates and then obviously those amortizations, like you can make a chunk there too. So I mean, if you manage those things right and find those right buyers, then, you know, manage the buyers a little bit, because sometimes people might fall out. I mean, that's a huge chunk. I mean, you can make good money doing that. We are not set up to do that in volume, but in small cases, I have a friend of mine in Florida who did that, and he was experimenting with setting up a whole system to do that. And I bought into his deal. I mean, he's just a friend. He's like, hey, I'm going to mass produce these. And if he could mass produce those deals, I'd be all over him. I think he realized it was more work to mass produce them for others. But there's a house, you know, in one of the situations, bought it cheap, 30 grand, 35 grand, sold it on terms for like 65 down payment, packed the interest rate. And I get a check, $700 every month, because I just paid 35 grand cash, and they're in like a 20-year loan straight up with me for X percent interest rate and $700 a month, PI, you know.
Yeah.
So it's great. It's great. I mean, from a cash flow perspective, it's great.
No doubt. You know, and it's funny, and you know him, Mike Cowper, we've had him on our show, and he did not understand creative financing. He started listening to the podcast, and he had a bunch of rentals in his market where he's like, I'm so sick of rentals. The taxes are ridiculously high. You got to go through this inspection every year, and you know, and by the time that it's all said and done, my cash flow is not what it should be. Well, he's gone and sold all of his properties now on contract.
Love it.
So now he's getting 11% interest on all of them, the maximum. He's like, I got 12, but the title company told me that's usury. So I had to back
contract for deed. Did he sell on contract for deed?
Land contracts, all of them. Yes.
You know, the thing with Cowper is, I mean, if he was on, your listeners know, but what they might not know about him is he is a rock star sales guy. He's a phenomenal sales guy. Now, he was turning his sales skills on being able to talk to sellers, negotiate deeper discounts. And I think I know he understands some owner finance from the buy, but if he learns that on the sell, like it sounds like he did, boom. I mean, those two things, I mean, a little bit of effort, obviously. It's not like, you know, it's not easy, but you do both of those. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Old Cowper. He's a good dude.
Yeah, I think he's trading out all of his rental properties for.
Yeah, he's got them all done now. Now he's figuring out how he can go get those terms from the seller, and then, you know, create some new terms to his buyer.
I mean, the best of all worlds for your visitors, the coup de grace with this whole thing would be if you could find somebody, an owner finance, this call is $1 million owner finance deal. You get 0% interest on this $1 million because you overpaid for a property. If you could get rid of the property, keep the million, get a note split provision, that no interest, chop it up so you could get it, you know, put this $50,000 at a time across these cheap houses in the Midwest. Cowper's in, he's in Michigan. If you could buy those houses for cheap in cash, and you could put his 50, replace that cash with, you buy it for cash for 40, throw a guy's note on it for 50 because it's worth 80, and the owner finance it for 90. So you're paying no interest, you're getting the spread, you're getting the big interest rate. Crazy. I mean, that right there, lights out, game over.
Crazy.
Easy. Not easy, but like you'd make so much money at that.
Yes.
Andy, you used the term note split provision. I'm not familiar with that term.
Can
you explain that a little bit for our listeners and myself?
It's a technical way of saying it, but when you're writing it, you know, all these different clauses you can put into somebody's note, first right of refusal, substitution collateral, all those things. A note split provision is just saying, look, John, I borrowed 300 grand from you, right? All the terms are the same, 4% interest, all that stuff. And I'm going to, if I ever move this money, move this chunk of money to a different piece of collateral, because we talked about the substitution collateral, although I didn't call it that, I just make sure that what I'm moving you to is worth more than the balance. You would agree with that? That's simple.
Yeah.
Well, wait a second. I call you up 6 months later and say, John, I have 10 houses and they're all worth 50 grand each and I owe you 300 grand. What if 300 divided by 10 is 30? What if I put you $30,000 in first position against these 10 houses that are worth 50? I mean, you're in a great position there. What do you think about that? The no split provision is just kind of giving them notice up front. Now, even if you don't get these things written into the contract, you can still call up and have that conversation and just say, hey, John, does this make sense to you? And they'll be like, yeah, I mean, why not? Cool. And then you've got 10 houses that you bought for 20 that you put his 30 on it that you're going to sell for 60. I mean, you guys can see the math, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I can see the math.
So if it ever had to start all over again and I was just a one-man band and I wanted to do that, I might have fun just doing less deals and just do something like that and just be like, you know what, and have fun with these 10 or 20 or 30 tenant buyers that I have, you know, just make buddies with them and just hook them up. Because the thing of it is, too, there's a lot of blue-collar people in the Midwest that's hard to get a $50,000 loan. So there's a little niche there. It's like banks don't want to lend a $50,000 loan, $60,000 loan. Yeah, it's under $100,000.
To get.
I'm not interested. Yep. So you can charge them more interest than a bank would. And when you're talking about $60,000 loan, 9% interest doesn't matter. If you amortize it, it's like no big deal.
That's funny. People ask me, so why don't you get higher interest rates like Mike or others like 9, 10, 11%? I'm like, because the properties we're buying are $380,000.
Yeah.
But go look at what your payment's going to be with a 9-10% interest payment on that. So you can get away with it on the lower price range stuff, but much more difficult to. You will always get a premium, but you're not getting that much when the prices go up.
Absolutely.
I love this. This has been so much fun for me. Always makes me think of different things that, I want to do in my business. It's always truly a pleasure to have you on, Andy. You're a wealth of knowledge, great experience, and that's all I can really say. It's been a fun time for me.
It's always fun for me too. I could talk about real estate forever. My wife is always like, she gets bored by it when on a podcast, you guys care about this. Everywhere else in the world is like, don't talk about this, right? So I'm always going to talk about podcasts. But your first episode, the episode we did before that maybe the viewers listened to or the listeners listened to it, I talked at the beginning about I just wanted freedom. And real estate for me was just a way that I could use those creative skills and help people get what they wanted. And I could get what I wanted. And ultimately what I wanted was freedom. And freedom doesn't have to be, from a financial standpoint. Somebody makes $1 million, is he financially free? Well, no, if he spends 1.1. And if somebody employs some of these creative strategies and helps people along the way, because I want to stress that helping them is just good for your conscience and it's good for them and it's good overall. If you help people do that and you can turn that into $60,000 a year and you can live on 40, you're a lot more free than the guy that made $1 million.
That's right.
So, and for me, I always just wanted that freedom. Front porch with my dad 17 years ago. I've achieved that at 40 years old. I've got that freedom. It doesn't mean I'm a gazillionaire. I'm not a gazillionaire, but I've got that freedom and I've got the peace of mind that comes with it. And I'm just so grateful that this country allows for that. Because really it's not, we were born here, so blessed to be born here. So many things to be grateful for. In the midst of all the horrible things that are happening in the country, man, I wouldn't trade it for the world. We live in such a great place with such opportunity that we can work and use our efforts to help other people and attain a level of financial freedom. And then once you get it, you get to choose what you want to do with it. And I hopefully choose to always serve and help other people, because that's where the true happiness comes. People have a bunch of money and they're wealthy and they're just like, just stepping on other people, whatever. They're not happy.
Right.
They're not happy. So happiness comes from serving and helping other people.
Yeah.
I love that. That's exactly how I feel too. Jonathan, the same way, I'm quite sure. It's different in everyone's eyes, and it's no fun to become wealthy if there's not something that you can do to help others with it. And I truly hope that you've helped others just by being on here, because I think that you shared certain strategies, certain ideas that people can actually go take and use and perhaps put them on that financial free path. At least to start with.
Yeah. And I share one more. I know we're way over time, but this is an example of these brings all these things together because I can. It's a deal I did recently. Can I share this one with people?
Yeah.
Sorry,
yeah,
this please. Is gonna be. So it's about helping people. So I had somebody send me a deal. I mean, I run a lot of deals, leads through my company. This was a private person that sent it to me. Friend, good friend, actually family member. Okay. brought me this lead, and it was a good lead. I went and negotiated it with the person, helped them get what they needed, and I negotiated a great deal on the house. So I bought a house for $225,000 outside of my company, right? This was just me doing it, because in my company, I have to do different splits and stuff. But I bought a house for $225,000. It didn't need much work, like $15,000 worth of work, and it was worth $315,000. Great deal, right? Great deal. So what I did with it was, I bought the house, I paid cash for it, $225,000 cash. But the person that brought me the lead, you know, as a family member, so I thought they needed to be benefit from this too. So I said, I'll pay cash for it. I'll be the lender and I'll loan an extra $15,000. So I'll be $240,000 into this as the lender in the property. And I'm going to do that, so we don't have to get loans, mortgage or anything. I own half of the house with you. The lender's separate entity that's owed $240,000. That $240,000, I'm going to charge it 4.5% interest. Fair. Interest only, fair. That's $900. $900 because this house rents for $1,650 a month, easy, right? So that's a good cash flow that's being created there for somebody that just produced the lead for me that I love, right? I love them, family member, right?
Yep.
So we did that. They're going to do the work on the house. That's phenomenal. I'm the financing on the house, $240. So why would I do that at 4.5% interest? One, I have a little bit of money, so it's fine to do that. But two, I also recognize I'm employing another strategy that I've used for years. I went, because the title was in my name initially, I went to a local bank and I said, hey, local bank, I'm financeable. I've got good credit. I've got good income. Will you loan me money in a first position equity line? Will you loan me 75 or 80% of the value? And they said they would. So I could go out and get a $235,000 equity line first position against the house. And that money's at 5% interest, right? So when I'm not borrowing, it's whatever. So I've got my cake and eat it too. I've got a great rental property, people handling that. It's a great deal for them doing that. I'm getting cash flow from that. I'm making 4.5% of my money sitting there and I haven't lost the opportunity to use the money. That right there, it's a creative deal that's structured, that's just going to bless them, bless me, bless everyone involved in that. And nobody has to be overly burdened by that, right?
Yep. Again, another way of using creative financing, not necessarily all the numbers, but you know how you're structuring something. And it starts with your mindset, right? It's about how do I get this done as opposed to there's no way I can do this kind of thing. So.
Yeah. And not being super greedy too, right? Not thinking like I have to, you know, you help enough other people get what they want. This is a Zig Ziglar quote I keep saying, you get what you want, right? And what I want too is them to be successful. This is my family member. I want them to be successful. Now, is it altruism? A little bit, but mostly it's like, I'm getting a benefit from that too, you know? And it feels good to do that. Yeah, sorry, John.
So are you recorded in second position then if you're taking a HELOC out on it or?
No, the way I did is I bought it my personal name because banks, local credit unions want it to be in your personal name. So I did that, got the financing, and then I transferred it into the LLC where we're 50-50 owners.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
So I did it. But I still, but the deal up front was I get to retain the use of that equity line because it's my money. So I'm getting the 4.5 regardless of what's withdrawn out of the equity line because I'm responsible to pay that interest if there is any at the time. Most of the time it's owned, but I get that month. I get that check every month as the lender. So separate entity. I'm the lender and I'm also the borrower paying half of that, right? So a little bit mind stretching, I guess, but to me it made sense. Just like, because my businesses generate cash, and with that cash, I want it to produce a return. And I don't ever end up to produce 30% returns on everything. But I want to produce something, you know. Yeah,
but you don't want to leave it in the bank and get your 0.75%.
Not for very long.
No,
I like to
Bitcoin.
Yeah, because you go out to work and make money. Your businesses can make money. Your rent, your money should make money, and rent, of course, properties that make money too. Different things making money for you.
Love it.
Well, thanks so much, Andy, for being on the show. You're like a wizard to me. You and Jeff, the way you think about these properties and using creative financing, it's something that I'm still learning in this business. And so I always learn something from you every time we talk, and definitely from you, Jeff, over these last 2 years that we've been doing the podcast. But yeah, thanks so much for being on. Thanks for the time. I know that's your most valued asset, and you're generous enough to give us your time. So I greatly appreciate that. Guys, if you want to meet Andy McFarland in person, he will be at Flip Hacking Live this year in Orlando, Florida, October 15th, 16th, and 17th. So if you're interested in that event, it's a phenomenal event. Go to fliphackinglive.com and get your tickets. Anything you want to add to that, Andy?
No, I'd love to meet you there. Whoever's there, come up and say, I heard you on the creative finance podcast, and I'll give you a hug. Or if it's still a big corona, I'll give you a little corona bump, you know?
If you mention that, he'll pay for your ticket. No.
cool. Jeff, any last words you want to add?
Yeah, first of all, pleasure having you, Andy, like always. Super special for me. I would absolutely recommend the Flip Pack. I don't know what you cost, but it's very reasonable. It's not like super high price. You will absolutely get your money's worth. And by the way, we're not getting anything from this. This is something that I know quite a bit about, and I just think it's a good resource for all of you. So, you know, obviously I have an apprentice program. If you're interested in that, call our hotline. I want to work with new investors all over the country. And Jonathan is going to start teaching a creative financing class because, you know, it's been 2 years now and he's ready. So actually yeah. We're doing it together and it is about to launch. So if you have questions or are interested in that, let us know. Strictly creative financing.
Yeah. Okay, guys. You can find all of our episodes at thecreativefinancingpodcast.com. We're on Facebook at the Creative Financing Podcast. We're also on Instagram. If you want to get a hold of us, leave us a comment, question, whatever. Our hotline number is 877-409-8090. Again, 877-409-8090. And then wherever you get your podcast, please like and subscribe to us. That really helps get the word out. And until next time, go out there and create some terms.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Financing Podcast. We need your feedback to continue to bring you the best strategies in creative financing. So please subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We greatly appreciate your ear, and please pass this on. Until next time, create some terms. This show offers general information on creative financing strategies and real estate investments. Nothing contained herein should be considered personal, legal, or financial advice. Every state has individual laws governing the use and type of documents used to execute strategies discussed herein. You should consult with a local licensed real estate broker and attorney before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed, and opinions of the guests are their own. Profits are not guaranteed, and there's always inherent risk in real estate investing.